Okay, so good afternoon. My name is David Klein for the Southern Oral History Program, the Duke Oral History Project, and the SNCC Documentary Project. And it is April 16th, 2010. We're in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm speaking today with Woodrow Coleman. And if you would introduce yourself, tell us when and where you were born and where you were raised.
Yeah.
We'll take it from there.
My name is Woodrow Coleman. I was born in Texarkana, Texas, in January 14, 1934.
And can you tell me a little bit about your family? How many kids were you in your family?
I had four brothers in my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was the oldest one. And three of them. Only one went to college. Funny thing, my third brother went to college. When he graduated from college, when he graduated from high school, I didn't think he wanted to go to college. And so, nobody had no money for him to go to college, it was no thing.
What did your father do?
My father worked at, he worked at Coca-Cola plant, and he worked at a place called a nursery. And when I was a kid, he worked at his nursery. And we had a little house, and we had all kind of fruit, mm-hmm. peach trees, pear trees, all around it. So we always had pretty fruit to eat. But anyway, as I was saying, my brother, it's a strange thing is, but one of my cousins lived next door had moved to Bakersfield, California. And it was cousins, and we were just like a whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And so she found out that, he didn't have no money to go to college. She said, come out here. You can stay with us and go to college. California, college was free. so even after that, he got a, he go to college, he had to work, so he got a job, security guard around the college,
mm-hmm.
which was a real good job, because it was a state job.
Mm-hmm.
So, he got that job. And then when he finished 2 years of college, he transferred to Cal State in Los Angeles, California. And he was always working for the state, just moved right over there and got a job,
mm-hmm.
It was the same job. And then he made a graduation from Cal State, and he got a job in police science,
mm-hmm.
He for an alcohol and beverage company. And I'm telling this story for one reason is just recently, the tuition was raised in California.
Right.
And I said, man, you should be out there protesting. Of course, you got a free education now, they're raising the fare. He said, well, they don't do no good there because there ain't no money. But, I realized, my brother realized here, he had three kids. All his kids went to college. All his kids went to college. They graduated from college because he had a college education. His wife had a college education. And their life is a lot better than mine, and they live a whole different life than better do, I have to think about that. Now I had one son. He graduated from college, but I didn't go to college.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about your schooling and going out for work and that kind of.
Well. I just graduated from high school,
mm-hmm.
and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started working.
In Texas?
Yeah. Well, technically, I worked all before then. During my time, it was lots of work around.
Mm-hmm.
I guess technically it was work around. It was, for kids, I guess. I used to get a lawnmower and just go around mowing people's lawn,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was all, you know, I worked all the time.
Mm-hmm. And how did you first get involved in movement kind of work, civil rights movement?
Well, I guess it came from my mother's part, mm-hmm. but once I came to California, I joined the NAACP. Because, you know, my mother said I should do it, you know, and I think my parents belonged to them too. Mm-hmm. And so they met once a month with me in East LA. And so I was like about 20 years old or something. And so it wasn't a lot of young people there, it was a bunch of old people, you know. Mm-hmm.
And you had moved, I'm sorry, you'd moved from Texas to
California.
To California.
Yeah. And so some guy said to me, he said, "Man, you don't need to be over these old people, you should be in Corps." I didn't know about Corps. So he said, "Yeah, man, that's where the young people's at." So he took me, he told me where to go, and I said, I went over to Corps, and I never been in a locked room, maybe two times bigger than this. It was the FOR office, Fellowship of Reconciliation Office. They used to, you know, they had, and then we worked at night, and so they used it in the daytime, so we met there. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I went to one, maybe two meetings or something. And the next meeting I went to was when Birmingham burst, when they put the dogs on the demonstration water. Mm-hmm. And the place was just full. I mean, it was like 15 or 20 new people that I didn't even see, you know. And what's going on? I knew it was a demonstration. And the thing that I thought, what was in the back of my mind came out is that the people was concerned about, that's the impression I got, they was concerned about mistreating them with the dog, not that the dogs were biting the people. And then, you know, and that was, you know, I didn't worry so much about that because, you know, if you got people, I was in the demonstration. But it took me a long time to realize that was important too, mistreatment of dogs. But dogs are unlike human beings. They can't talk, they can't vote, they can't say nothing. If somebody beats nobody. If nobody says nothing for dogs, they'll just be, they don't have no voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the way I got in involved in CORE. And from then we started raising money and doing demonstrations, simply demonstrations.
Can I stop you just one
sure.
second and take a quick break? I'm sorry.
Trying to coordinate the people. We're doing recordings over at the hotel a little bit later.
Oh yeah.
So we're moving people back and forth, and she's someone that needs to be over at the hotel right now. So it's been a little bit of a mess getting this stuff coordinated back and forth. Having two different sites, you know, we have to take care of. But. Have you been enjoying the conference so far?
Yeah. I really. Jim McBell was running today.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was right on the mark.
Yeah. I had to miss it. I was doing interviews here, so I missed it. But it was good, huh?
Yeah.
I saw him speak at Duke about 2 years ago, I think. Most amazing thing I think I've ever seen.
You know, Frank, you talk about Duke.
Mm-hmm.
My son moved from here, from California here. And we were talking last night about Duke.
Oh yeah.
And he was saying I like Duke. They got an atomic energy plant, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And he said, they saying by 2010 or 20 something, they want to have 75% atomic energy and 25, 30% coal.
Oh.
I said, what about wind and solar? No, no, that ain't even subject.
Wow.
He said, some elected official said she brings it up every time, and they don't, they vote it down, they don't even talk about it. I didn't know nothing about North Carolina until he moved here. And I'm learning a little about it.
Yeah, it's an interesting place, isn't it?
Yeah, right. It's just the difference between North Carolina and South Carolina is night and day.
Oh, yeah. Did you figure it all out?
Yes.
Jesse should be over there, isn't it? Right,
so right, but he's going to go now.
Okay, it'll work out.
Well, it's all going to work out. Okay.
I don't forget where we left off at.
Okay, so you were just saying how you've gotten involved in CORE and that really that first couple of meetings you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so what year was that you moved to L.A.?
In 55.
Okay.
Yeah. And anyway, so we started doing support for Birmingham. Like, we would pick it up, the federal building in protest, you know, the Justice Department to do something about the civil rights demonstration, you know, down south. So that went on for a while. And all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, I guess from that, the Freedom Ride started. And LA Corps sent more Freedom Riders than anybody else. They sent about 300 and some odd Freedom Riders down south. They sent one group to down south, and I think they sent one group to Texas. So that was a whole new experience, Freedom Ride thing. And it really was amazing the kind of support we got. For instance, we had one Freedom Rider that was went down to Mississippi, and he was too young, and they sent him back. And so we just worked him to death, because every night he had to go speak. It was somebody wanted to speak, and he went around, because he was the only Freedom Rider available. And so he really worked. He was a young dude too, and I guess he had a lot of energy. And so every night he was speaking somewhere. I think about it nowadays. He was speaking at Jewish community centers, primary churches and places like that. And we raised $15, $20 or something like that. You know, it don't mean nothing now. But I mean, you know, when the Freedom Rides came back, you had to get them down there. You had to raise the money to send them down there and come back. But also, I think they sent them back. I think CORE paid for the little bit back. But I think we paid for the tickets to go down there. And sometimes we had to do it. When they went back, we had to do it by an airline. But we managed to raise that money just about, you know, you did you get, you know, by, we had been raised that money just by, you know, $15, $20 and just like that around. Right. Yeah.
What kinds of other work do you remember doing with CORE?
Other thing that we did, we had a city at a housing track in a place called Monterey, which is like 15 minutes, well, not 15 minutes, but 15 minutes drive in those days from Los Angeles. It was still in LA County. And, you know, where housing tracks are made. They have 3 or 4 mile houses, and you know, you get directed people to the house, mile houses, and that's where you make the sale at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but once you take hold of mile houses, they don't have nowhere to do. You don't set the operation down. So we had to sit in a housing track for about, I think it was some kind of record, like 65 days, 65 nights, in a place called Monterey Park.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we just started on Saturday. And on Sunday, the police chief came out. He said, "What's going on?" I said, "Well, we just sat out here waiting to buy a house." And so he said, "Oh, okay." And so he came back. We never seen him no more. But we finally got the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What other kind of, do you remember other projects that you were involved in, or?
Yeah, we had several housing projects that we worked on. One of them was a place in Wilmington, California, near the beach. Not on the beach. Yeah, near the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Well, postal guy worked with post office on the house,
mm-hmm.
and they would set the house. And this wasn't necessarily in a housing tract, but this was the guy built a bunch of houses. So what we did was, we got a white couple to go in and see the house. And he's gonna manage you up for, you know, still, you know, you come out and they give you the key, they let you have the key and go around and look at the house. So when he got the key, we was already set, we just moved into the house, physically, four or five of us physically moved into the house. And we fixed the house up, you know, put stuff on the floor, pavement stuff, because this is the house that they wanted. So we wanted the house to be new, just like, you know, not even used. We wanted to be just like it was a new house. So we, you know, made sure that, you know, it was, you know, we put stuff down so we wouldn't mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
And we just physically moved into the house. Had the lights, telephone, and all that hooked up on, and stayed there for a couple of weeks. One of the things that I did, I was working, so it was up people in the daytime, so I would leave to go to work every morning.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I left to go to work, and I still do this today. I came back, somebody was, you know, let you in the house. I came back 3 times. I don't know, I always forget stuff. I guess the third time I came back, the guy just knew it was me, so he just opened the door and it was police. And they arrested everybody.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I used to call the house every day at 12 o'clock to see. And what happened? You know, nobody knew, my phone rang. And nobody has a phone. So I finally called the office and they told me to be arrested. So what we did was, We got sleeping bags. It was in wintertime too, by the way. I mean, it was cold too. And moved out on the lawn, you know, the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the way, there wasn't no lawn out there because it was just dirt, you know. So we moved out there, and we stayed out there maybe a week. And the police come in. Arrested us off, took us to jail. And so they took us all to jail, took a sleeping bag, everything. They took, so when you arrest, they take all that stuff. So as soon as we got out of jail, we immediately started getting more sleeping bags and stuff. It moved right back on the lawn. But by that time, one of the neighbors across the street, his name was Mr. Castro, had wetted the whole thing down, the yard, with mud that thick in it. Yeah, they just did wet the whole thing down. So we just got out in the mud. It laid out there in the mud. I mean, just the winter time, man. Anyway, so at some point, I don't know how long it was, the police come and arrested from there. Now, this time when they come, we had a photograph for taking pictures. And you know, it was mud, they got all mud and everything. And you see police doing with their feet on people and all that. And this guy was taking these pictures. Took these pictures. And, you know, it took us all off jail. And a guy with Newsweek. And I can't remember his name. He went for Newsweek. He wanted to see the pictures. He said, yeah, well, he reported some pictures. So we got the picture developed and took them out to him, gave them to him. And he looked at them. He said, oh, no. He said, I can't publish these pictures. He said, nobody will believe this. This only happens in the shower. So he never he never published the pictures. And it really just sort of, really, I don't know what you got to talk about. Anyway, so, one thing led to another. So at some point, maybe 5-6 years later, this guy ain't working for Newsweek. He's working, this doing when they had the underground papers. Mm-hmm. It was once upon a time, we had underground papers all over the country. Well, probably in California, I don't know. I guess other country, other part of the city too. Mm-hmm. He got a good job working for some rich guy to put out a new newspaper. And the paper was really a good paper, had a lot of money behind it. But the paper wasn't said people wouldn't buy it. So somebody sold him a story, I think $10,000 for D.B. Cooper. You know who D.B. Cooper is? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They said, showed the D.B. Cooper story. And I think the story was, they knew what D.B. Cooper was. He bought the story. Mm-hmm. Before he printed it, everybody knew it was a hoax. And so anyway, the guy fired him for that. So I got a big kick out of it.
Now, did you follow the development of SNCC and the work that SNCC was doing? Did you know about that there on the West Coast?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that much. Later on, as I got more into the movement, I began to follow SNCC. And we had some little support groups of SNCC out there. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was a good combination between SNCC and CORE. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you continue to work in the movement?
Yeah. I'm not professional guy, but as you know, we got involved in employment because we done a lot of work. A lot of work in housing. And L.A. Cole was known for housing, you know. A lot of people don't understand about housing. One of the things we did was, and this was copied all, we got it from somebody else, but it was copied all over the nation. And at one point, they wouldn't build on new houses for minorities. Mm-hmm. Only less than 1% only houses they got were the houses when the whites moved out of them,
Right.
Yeah. So what we did, we got this from somebody else. It wasn't our idea. We put a something called Operation Window Shop. Because we had people coming all the time wanting to buy houses, but the people wouldn't sell them to them. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have the ability and the manpower to go around to every housing tract. It was all over the place. It's building everywhere. So we didn't have the manpower. So they developed this thing called Operation Window Shop. And that's why we told people, go out and go anywhere you want to buy a house, you go find it. And if they won't sell it to you, then you come back and tell us. You find the house and we'll get it for you. So the first time we did it, all the houses and all the people and all the houses track, they closed down for the weekend. Mm-hmm. So we done it, you know. So the second time was when that means the weekend is when you sell houses, and you know you can't stay in Venice, and if you discriminate, you can't stay in Venice and sell houses. So that had a big effect on discrimination, in the sense that, you know, these guys are, you know, they couldn't afford to sit down. Mm-hmm. So we got a lot of people in the houses, you know, they had to. So that had a big effect on housing. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we started doing stuff on employment. And, you know, we attract a lot of peoples, you know, a mass of peoples. And we had a bunch of young peoples, and it was a bunch of old folks. And I was part of a group in Corp known as the Action Faction. Mm-hmm. They would say, all we want is action. We didn't want to do nothing but just pick it and sit in and stuff like mm-hmm. that, you know. So we led to something. We don't call it a split. We just a bunch of moves started from another organization. Was Core still exists? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was called the Nonviolent Action Committee. It was technically built on a SNCC. It was on SNCC Mall. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing was, wasn't in the black community. We moved right down in the black community. And we had we didn't have the restraining. We didn't have the restraining. We could do technically what we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was that mostly African-Americans in that group, or was that mixed?
It was a mixed group, yeah. Yeah.
And what were you able to do with that group that you
doing
with the Core?
One of the things we took on a couple of drive-ins, two of them. Mm-hmm. One was right in the black community. They weren't black, and we shut it down. You know, obviously that's easy to shut it down, mm-hmm. but one in the white community. We weren't able to shut that down as easy, but we did eventually got to shut it down. And then we took on a company called, a big major company, not a major company, but a big company, a Vandekamp Bakery. Mm-hmm. It was a big bakery company. And they had shelves in major supermarkets. And they had a bakery. They had truck drivers that drive the stuff out to the bakeries. And they had stores where they just sold the product. Mm-hmm. It was a big, big company. But each store they had at least one woman in there. Woman anyway. And she just sat in the back. And her job was to, every time somebody bought something, they come out and stock it up. It was good jobs. And they wouldn't have no black for that. Because mm-hmm. it was a Dutch thing, right? You know, right. Uniform, they went out. And so, they also had the restaurants. And they had a bunch of restaurants. So what we used to do is have sip-ins at the restaurants. We'd get a restaurant, and everybody just order a cup of coffee and just see how long we could stay on the cup of coffee. Just take all the seats.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And the
goal was to get them to hire.
Yeah, right.
Black folks in the restaurant.
Yeah,
it.
Right. Yeah, it's waiters and other jobs, right. And also, you know, they had what the number was, but they had a bunch of drivers too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, right. Drive trucks, right. Yeah, all of those good jobs. And also that working in the bank, all that stuff. And all this stuff was premium stuff. It wasn't just your regular stuff. When I say it was premium, it was sold at a premium.
Right.
Yeah. It's like Starbucks, that kind of stuff. Yeah, right. Anyway, so one other thing we did with the restaurants, I mean, at the stores. See, the store, they didn't have stores. It was in the stores. Mm-hmm. And so what we did, we had shopping at the stores. Where we go in and get a shopping bag and sing all through the store with picket signs and fill up all the bags with stuff. You know, just take all the shelves off and just push it down the store. and leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we done it at night, like, after 6 o'clock. So that means that there wasn't no stuff sold during the day if the store was 24 hours there. You know, the person in the morning had to come in and restock the stuff back up.
Right.
Yeah, right. And so we had a route. We just hit store, and it takes 15 or 20 minutes to do the whole thing. And we got so good at, the store managers, when they see us coming, we'd sing. It was freedom songs all through the store. And we'd push the stuff all around the store, which is interesting. And I remember we had a big discussion. Some of the places had ice cream, you know. So we had a discussion. Somebody wanted to take the ice cream, because if you take the ice cream out, they wouldn't melt.
Right.
So I was talking to Bruce. I said, you remember, we had this discussion about doing the ice cream, but we never did do the ice cream. We just did the bakery stuff. Of course, I mean, sometimes you messed it up too. But, you know, so what did you
right.
But, yeah, but ice cream, you know, if you fill out, it melts, you know. So those, and now, the local paper, we had three editorials in one day in the paper about that. Yeah, it was a big thing. You know.
Do you think you're able to affect some change, create some change?
Oh yeah, we definitely make changes. I think the same thing, Frank. If you're working on one company, but if some of the other is competition over there watching too, if they're doing wrong, they want to clean up their act too, because they figure they might be next. Because, we weren't in a position where we could attack everybody. But, you could hit and miss. I mean, hit one today, hit one the next day, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think we made changes.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is making people aware of what's going on, you know. Because later on, we talked to some kids, small kids. They had seen it, you know. And they said they went in the store and done the thing. We didn't know them about it. They went in and done the same thing. We had shopping in the stores.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how has these last couple of days been for you, being here and hearing other stories? And
It's been great. It's stories I'm familiar with, but not necessarily from a Southern background, but the same stories, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are there parts of sort of civil rights history that normally get taught that don't include the stories that you know? Are there stories that you feel that people need to know?
I'm just trying to think of some. Most of the important things is, and I think most of the, I'm sure that most of the people in the South too, is you spend more time trying to recruit people,
mm-hmm.
getting, you know, than you do working on the you know, attacking the problem.
Right.
Yeah, but because it's education in that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah, I guess that's part of the problem. You don't look at it. You don't look at it. I don't think we need to look at it as being educated. I mean, after so many years, I guess you realize that's part of the education. It's an education problem. But you don't look at it that way. You know, you look at it, hey, you know, this is happening. I think you should get involved in this. And it takes you a long time to realize that those people, you would like that sometime in your town.
Mm-hmm.
And they got other things on their mind. They got other things. And it's easier to forget about it, think about something else. Look, you know. And I think we've been taught that. Is you know, look somewhere else. You know, I was talking about my brother, how his kids, you know, all his kids got education.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have no social responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about civil rights. They're not involved in that. They don't give a shit. They're involved in nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not involved in anything. And not his family, they're not involved in that.
How about you? Are you still involved?
Sure, yeah. Yeah. I'm in an organization called the Labor Community Strategy Center now. And we, we organizing, we've been doing it for about 10 years, is organizing bus riders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but is there anything that I didn't ask you that I should have asked you, or anything that you expected me to ask you that I didn't ask you? Or?
I don't know. I mean, I can go on, and I don't know if I can go on and on, but you know, I can't think of nothing else. I mean, you can ask me what I've been doing lately.
Tell us, mm-hmm. What have you been doing lately?
Well, in Los Angeles, they're trying to raise the bus there.
Mm-hmm.
When we started about 10, 15 years, the MTA in LA,
mm-hmm.
Buses was falling apart. I mean, really falling apart. They're building the rail. I mean, every city now is building rail. Mm-hmm. But LA is really building rail. They just got $6 billion, I think, to build a bullet train from San Francisco to mm-hmm. Los Angeles. And I think Durham, they got the rest of the money to build a train from here to Washington, I think.
Hmm.
It's somewhere, I don't know where. But anyway, but every time they build, every time they rail, in Los Angeles, a majority of the people use buses.
Mm-hmm.
Because unlike New York and these other modern cities, these old cities, they got the subways and all that thing.
Right.
They got the top people stacked on top of each of people. We don't have people on top of each stacker. We got people, we spread all out.
Right.
You know, in Los Angeles, you can go 35 miles and still be in the city.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's no and trains don't work that way. You need a system like buses,
mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you can stop them, park them, or turn a corner or something like that. And we already got the rails. We already got the streets out there. All we do is just mark a line up, make a bus lane, and run buses down it. And also, we got miles and miles of freeways. We put a lot of money in those freeways.
Mm-hmm.
They're for cars, right? Yeah, but and. We just like we subsidizing cars, that's what we're doing. We're gonna be subsidizing buses, bus system. And that's what we need. Because fuel is and everything is high. You know, ridership of automobiles going down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can use, and trains can't do the same thing as buses. I mean, if we had a population, it'd be a different thing. So we're trying to, and so they raising the fare.
Mm-hmm.
And like all transit system, a train to get about 19 cents off the box. Buses, they get about 20 cents, or 20% off a bus. So even trains are more expensive, it costs more to operate, they get less money out of it. You have to put more money, more substitute, what's that when they give money to something?
Subsidies.
You give more subsidies for trains than to buses, but the MTA don't care, because it ain't their money, it's taxpayers' money.
Mm-hmm.
So what they care, but they don't ride it no more. So we don't have an elected MTA board. We have five city councilmen that are appointed by the mayor. The mayor and four city councilmen. And we have five supervisors, board supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
And they each on the board. And then we got three other people from other cities.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so technically we got about 100 cities from LA, but they only get three votes. So the county and the city really run to the MTA board. But none of them is elected to be on the board. They're elected for something else, like the mayor and the city council. They run the city council. They run the MTA, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we need elected board. I mean, guys, it's responsible to us. Yeah.
So that's one of the things you're trying to do is to bring pressure to create a board.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that.
It's a big job.
Yeah.
And it's happening over all the city. And some cities are getting rid of the transit system. I'm not getting rid of them, getting rid of the bus system.
Mm-hmm.
They can't afford it no more.
Anything else you want to add?
That's it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.